1st October 1936, talk number 253. Mr. F. G. Pierce, principal of Shindia School, Gwalior. Bhagavan stated in Sad Vidya Supplement, Sloka 27, quote, "The illiterate are certainly better off than the literate, whose egos are not destroyed by the quest of the self," unquote. This being so, could Bhagavan advise a schoolmaster who feels this to be true, how to carry on education in such a way that the desire for literacy and intellectual knowledge may not obscure the more important search for the self? Are the two incompatible? If they are not, then from what age and by what means can young people best be stimulated towards the search for the real truth within? Maharshi, pride of learning and desire for appreciation are condemned, and not learning itself. Learning leading to search for truth and humility is good. A request from the same seeker. The above questioner has spent two very precious days in physical proximity to Bhagavan Maharshi, whom he has not seen since 17 years ago. He visited him for a few minutes on the hillside. His duties now compel him to take his body far away again to the north, and it may be years before he can return. He humbly requests Bhagavan to make a strong link with him and to continue to help him with his grace in the quest of the self. Maharshi had a gentle smile for this. Talk number 254. Mr. Duncan Greenlees quoted a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam to the following effect. "See the self in yourself like the pure ether in all beings, in and out. Unashamed, fall prostrate before even an outcast, a cow, or an ass. So long as I am not perceived at all, worship all with body and mind. With right knowledge, see all as Brahma. This once clear, all doubts are at an end, and you will remain withdrawn in the self." He then raised the following questions. Devotee, is this the true path to realization of the one self? Is it not easier for some thus to practice seeing Bhagavan in whatever meets the eye than to seek the supermental through the mental inquiry, "Who am I?" Maharshi, yes, when you see God in all, do you think of God or do you not? You should certainly keep God in your mind, for seeing God all around you. Keeping God in your mind becomes dhyana. Dhyana is the stage before realization. Realization is in the self only. Dhyana must precede it. Whether you make dhyana of God or of the self, it is immaterial. The goal is the same. But you cannot escape the self. You want to see God in all, but not in yourself? If all are God, are you not included in that all? Yourself being God, is it a wonder that all are God? There must be a seer, a thinker for even the practice. Who is he? Devotee, through poetry, music, japa, bhajan, beautiful landscapes, reading the lives of spiritual heroes, etc., one sometimes experiences a true sense of all unity. Is that feeling of deep, blissful quiet, wherein the personal self has no place, the, quote, "entering into the heart," unquote, whereof Bhagavan speaks. Will practice of that lead to a deeper samadhi, and so ultimately to a full vision of the real? Maharshi, again, there is happiness at agreeable sights, etc. It is the happiness inherent in the self. That happiness is not alien. You are diving into the pure self on occasions which you consider pleasurable. That diving reveals the self-existent bliss. But the association of ideas is responsible for foisting this bliss onto other things or happenings. In fact, it is within you. On these occasions, you are plunging into the self, though unconsciously. If you do so consciously, you call it realization. I want you to dive consciously into the self, that is, into the heart. Talk number 255. Devotee, if the self be always realized, we should only keep still. Is that so? Maharshi, if you can keep still without engaging in other pursuits, it is very good. If that cannot be done, where is the use of being quiet so far as realization is concerned? So long as one is obliged to be active, let him not give up the attempt to realize the self. Talk number 256. A question was asked regarding the position of one whose jnana is weak in the scheme of things. The doubt was if that manda jnani had stopped short of kaivalya nirvikalpa. Maharshi, kaivalya nirvikalpa happens even in the stage of attenuated mind. Devotee, the middling and superior jnanis are said to be jiva muktas. Kaivalya nirvikalpa is in tanu manasa. Where does one whose jnana is weak fit in? Maharshi, he comes in sattvapadi realization, whereas the middling and the superior ones come in asamsaki and pardarthabhavini, respectively. This division as dull, middling, and superior is according to the momentum of prabdha. If it is strong, he is weak. If it is middling, he is middling too. If prabdha is weak, he is superior. If it is very weak, he is inter-yaga. There is no difference in the samadhi state or the jnana of the jnanis. The classification is only from the standpoint of the observer. Devotee, is namunamasi the same as mumukshuva? Maharshi, no. The six qualities, discrimination, dispassion, and mumukshukva, etc., precede shubhekcha. The first stage follows mumukshukva, then comes the search, then the tenuous mind. Direct perception is in sattavapati, realization. There is no need to discuss similar points. Jiva Mukti and Vidyaha Mukti are differently described by different authorities. Videham Mukti is sometimes said to occur even when the man is seen with the body. The fact is that Mukti is another name for Aham, I. The seven stages of knowledge are 1. Desire for enlightenment, 2. Hearing and reflection, 3. Tenuous mind, 4. Self-realization, 5. Non-attachment, 6. absolute non-perception of objects, and 7, beyond words. Those who have attained the last 4 bhumikas are respectively called Brahmavit, Brahmavidvara, Brahmavidvarya, and Brahmavidvarishta. Talk number 257. Devotee. A certain young man from Dindigul spoke to Sri Bhagavan, saying that he had learnt by his stay for a few days that all that he need do was to inquire, "Who am I?" He wanted to know if any discipline was to be observed and started with the question, "Where should I do inquiry?" Meaning, if he should do it in Guru Sanidhi, the presence of the Master. Maharshi, the inquiry should be from where the I is. Devotee, people labor for gaining the summum bonum of life. I think that they are not on the right track. Sri Bhagavan has made considerable tapas and achieved the goal. Sri Bhagavan is also desirous that all should reach the goal and willing to help them to that end. His vicarious tapas must enable others to reach the goal rather easily. They need not undergo all the hardships which Sri Bhagavan has already undergone. Their way has been made easy for them by Sri Bhagavan. Am I not right? Maharshi smiled and said, "If that were so, everyone would easily reach the goal, but each one must work for himself." Talk number 258. Devotee. A young man from Mysore gave a written slip to Sri Bhagavan and waited for an answer. He had asked Sri Bhagavan to say where other Mahatmas could be found whom he might approach for guidance. He confessed that he had left his home without informing his elders in order that he might seek God through Mahatmas. True, he knew nothing of God or of search for him. Therefore, he desired to see Mahatmas. Sri Bhagavan simply returned the note, saying, "I must answer any and every question. Unless I do so, I am not great." The boy tore away the slip and wrote another, which said, "You are kind to squirrels and hares. You fondle them when they struggle to run away from you. Yet you are indifferent to human beings. For instance, I have left my home and am waiting here for a fortnight. I have had no food for some days. I am struggling. Still, you do not care for me." Maharshi, "Look here, I am not endowed with television. God has not bestowed that gift on me. What shall I do? How can I answer your questions? People call me Maharshi and treat me like this, but I do not see myself as a Maharshi. On the other hand, everyone is a Maharshi to me. It is good that you, in this early age, are attempting to seek God. Concentrate on God. Do your work without desiring the fruits thereof. That is all that you should do." Talk number 259. Nada, Bindu, and Kalya correspond to prana, mind, and intellect. Ishwara is beyond nada, sound. Nada, jyoti, or light, etc., are mentioned in yoga literature, but God is beyond these. The circulation of blood, respiration of air, and other functions of the body are bound to produce sound. That sound is involuntary and continuous. That is nada. Talk number 260. an extract from the book A Hermit in the Himalayas was found in the Sunday Times. It related to recapitulation of past incarnations. In it, Paul Brunton has mentioned the Buddhist method for gaining that faculty. Sri Bhagavan said, "There is a class of people who want to know all about their future or their past. They ignore the present. The load from the past forms the present misery. The attempt to recall the past is a mere waste of time." Talk number 261. There was a reference to reincarnation. Reincarnation of Shanti Devi tallies with the 100 standards of time, whereas the latest case reported of a boy of 7 is different. The boy is 7 years now. He recalls his past births. Inquiries go to show that the previous body was given up 10 months ago. The question arises how the matter stood for 6 years and 2 months previous to the death of the former body. Did the soul occupy 2 bodies at the same time? Sri Bhagavan pointed out that the 7 years is according to the boy. 10 months is according to the observer. The difference is due to these 2 upadeshas. The boy's experience extending to 7 years has been calculated by the observer to cover only 10 months of his own time. Sri Bhagavan again referred to Lila's story in Yoga Vashistha. Talk number 262. Dr. Said, a Muslim professor, is now here. A skeptic friend of his had confronted him with the question, "What miracle does your Maharshi work?" He had replied that the ordinary people, being no better than animals, are made men, and that we, being only his children, are endowed with strength by Maharshi. He desired to know if he was right in replying to him. Refreshing peace within is the highest miracle. Maharshi possesses it. "What is that to us?" the other man asked. I replied, "The same peace is bestowed on all visitors to be shared by them. Mr. Paul Brunton has mentioned it in his book. Everyone feels it every day in Maharshi's presence." The whole conversation was mentioned to Sri Bhagavan with the following addition. Parasurama has said that he felt some refreshing peace within when he met Samvritta on the way. So he made him out to be a great saint. Is not such peace the sole criteria of a Mahatma's presence? Is there anything else? Sri Bhagavan said, a Madhva saint, Tat Varoyar, had composed a Bharani on his master, Swarupananda. Pandits objected to the composition, saying that it was reserved to such as have killed more than 1,000 elephants in battle, whereas Swarupanan was an idle man sitting somewhere unknown to people, and he did not deserve that panegyric. Tat Varoyar asked them all to assemble before his master so that they might see for themselves if he could slay 1,000 elephants at a time. They did so. As soon as they appeared, they were struck dumb and remained in beatific peace for a few days without the least movement. When they regained their senses, they saluted both the master and the disciple, saying that they were more than satisfied. Swarupanand excelled the warriors in that he could subdue the egos, which is a much more formidable task than slaying 1,000 elephants. Maharshi said that the moral was clear. Peace is the sole criteria of a Mahatma's presence.